That's really difficult to say whether there is a concerted effort on the part of the administration to thwart people's efforts to vote in this election as new citizens. I think that it's very easy to say, however, that based on a system and pattern of practice over the course of the past 3+ years of this administration, there's absolutely no question that the administration is hostile to all forms of immigration.
This year, the coronavirus pandemic brought naturalization ceremonies to a screeching halt, ensuring that thousands of immigrants won't be able to become citizens in time for the November election. On this week's episode, we dive into the barriers documented immigrants face in their journey to citizenship and the role the Trump administration plays in making it difficult for aspiring Americans to reach the ballot box. America, the voiceless. I'm Nikki Rojas.
And I'm Maria Elena Perez. We're the hosts of America the Voiceless.
We believe all Americans have a voice, but too many Americans face roadblocks when it comes to casting their vote. America the Voiceless looks into the barriers many Americans have to overcome to make sure their voices are heard during the voting process.
Thousands of immigrants who were set to participate in naturalization ceremonies this year were temporarily barred from becoming citizens when USCIS suspended immigration services due to the pandemic. The setback left these immigrants wondering if they would be able to become citizens in time for the presidential elections in November. But was the suspension of these vital ceremonies just a part of the Trump administration's hardline anti-immigration stance?
President Donald Trump has made it really clear that his administration does not want immigrants in the U.S., no matter their legal status. In March, the agency in charge of immigration suspended all in-person immigration services, including naturalization ceremonies. The suspension, which was initially set to last until April, caused further setbacks in a process that is beset with backlogs.
In our sixth episode, we'll dive into the setbacks faced by documented immigrants who just want to become naturalized citizens in time for the election. We spoke to Jacob Sapochnik and Jennifer Minear, two immigration lawyers who explained how chaos at USCIS amid a global pandemic really affected documented immigrants seeking naturalization ahead of Election Day, and whether they believe USCIS can clear through the recent backlog.
Do you think USCIS will be able to catch up with all the citizenship requests in time for the upcoming presidential election?
Unfortunately, no, I don't think that's a real option. It's important to remember that even before the pandemic, USCIS already had a significant backlog of hundreds of thousands of naturalization cases. So it's very unlikely that they would be able to move through all of the cases in that backlog, in addition to the ones that were created by the pandemic and the consequent shutdown of USCIS for several months. I know that they are trying to prioritize reducing that naturalization backlog and to work through those cases. They've stated that, but I think it would be impossible for them to complete all processing of cases that are in the pipeline before November.
Jacob, on the other hand, was far more positive about USCIS's efforts to make up for lost time, but he was still pretty clear that the agency will be unlikely to naturalize hundreds of thousands of immigrants waiting to gain citizenship.
So I think they've already started to try to catch up. I mean, I think it was reported that if they're not going to catch up, 500,000 people are going to miss it. So far, they were able to get to about 150,000 of those people, from what I understand. I don't know if, I don't think they're going to be able to do to get to all of them, unfortunately. But, it's better than what we thought before when they were not scheduling the oath ceremonies. And we were really concerned that so many people are going to be out of being able to vote. So I think they're trying, but I think quite a few are going to be left out, unfortunately.
USCIS spokesperson Dan Hetlich told us in a statement that the agency was on track to having another extremely productive year adding that the agency expects to finish the fiscal year having welcomed 600,000 new citizens. The agency claimed that since resuming ceremonies in June, it was able to clear through the 110,000 oaths affected by COVID-19.
Despite the agency's efforts to clear through their immense backlog, Jacob was critical of any real efforts to innovate the way the agency performs immigration services.
USCIS really have not put any efforts to use technology to make life of immigrants easier. The only thing they've done is accept e-signatures, thank God, on some forms. But aside from that, we haven't seen too many efforts from them to step up the game.
USCIS may not have used technology like Zoom calls to make naturalization ceremonies more remote-friendly, but Hetlich told us that the agency did develop alternative formats for shorter naturalization ceremonies for anyone whose ceremony was affected by the pandemic. These even included curbside and drive-through ceremonies. Yes, you heard that correctly. That allowed applicants to remain in their cars as they took the oath of allegiance.
In America, you can get almost anything in a drive-thru, including now, this very happy spiel.
You're gonna raise your right hand.
The oath of allegiance to become a U.S. citizen.
Congratulations, you're an American citizen.
Want fries with that?
There you go.
Crazy as it looks, this is how the American dream now starts. Immigrants who've completed all the requirements of citizenship are pulling into parking lots from San Diego to Des Moines to Detroit for socially distant naturalization ceremonies.
In August, the Trump administration also took the unusual step to conduct a naturalization ceremony at the White House for the Republican National Convention.
Today, America rejoices as we welcome five absolutely incredible new members into our great American family. You are now fellow citizens of the greatest nation on the face of God's earth. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Great going. You followed the rules, you obeyed the laws, you learned your history, embraced our values, and proved yourselves to be men and women of the highest integrity. It's not so easy. You went through a lot, and we appreciate you being here with us today. You've earned the most prized, treasured, cherished, and priceless possession anywhere in the world. It's called American citizenship. There is no higher honor and no greater privilege.
Following the televised event, at least two of the newly naturalized citizens told the Wall Street Journal that they were unaware the ceremony would involve President Trump or that it would be televised for the RNC.
God, how typical of Trump and Republicans to use black and brown immigrants for their benefit after spending the last 3.5 years demonizing immigrants, instituting bans, and spreading misinformation about them.
You know, that's really difficult to say whether there is a concerted effort on the part of the administration to thwart people's efforts to vote in this election as new citizens. I think that it's very easy to say, however, that based on a system and pattern of practice over the course of the past 3+ years of this administration, there's absolutely no question that the administration is hostile to all forms of immigration, both those who are here without authorization and those who have only ever followed the rules and are, you know, going through the system legally. They are doing everything they can to delay, disrupt, dismantle the system, to make it as difficult as possible, to slow everything down. And that's been an across the board strategy since this administration took office. So I'm not sure that it's really different now that we're rolling into the election season. In terms of trying to actively prevent people from becoming citizens. But there's no question that that is a general theme of this administration.
After the suspension of naturalizations, Senator Martin Heinrich expressed concerns over USCIS's true motives. The New Mexico Democrat even said that he suspected the suspensions were more about the Trump administration's anti-immigrant stance than they were about COVID-19. Heinrich told Las Cruces Sun News, "Because we can't get straight answers, I'm beginning to worry that they intend to do this through the election, that this is not a COVID issue. This is beginning to feel like an anti-immigration issue."
In May, Heinrich and Republican Senator Marco Rubio joined forces to call on USCIS to increase the number of naturalization ceremonies taking place and find alternative oath-taking methods that complied with coronavirus safety measures. USCIS resumed naturalization ceremonies shortly after. Although the agency has resumed immigration requests, the Trump administration's anti-immigration stance continues to concern immigrants of all legal statuses.
Jennifer explained that immigrants are anxiously looking to get the most protection while living under the current administration.
There is a general tenor of fear and anxiety among the legal immigrant population in the United States, not to mention the undocumented. And those who have legal options are trying to do whatever they can to move further up the chain towards citizenship. So if they're here on a temporary work visa, they're more anxious than ever to become permanent residents. If they're permanent residents, they're more anxious than ever to become U.S. citizens so that they can be afforded the maximum amount of protection from what they view as a very hostile administration.
The Trump administration has made life stressful for undocumented immigrants and DACA recipients, but documented immigrants have also been targeted by the president. At the end of July, USCIS increased citizenship fees by a whopping 83%. We asked Jennifer and Jacob if the fee increase will make naturalization and other immigration-related fees unreachable for immigrants. Jennifer believes it does.
Effective October 2nd, it will go up to over $1,000. That is a lot of money for almost all people to consider contemplating paying for an immigration benefit. By contrast, the government filing fee to file for an extension of your green card, in other words, to just get a new green card, they're valid for 10 years, and then you can apply to extend them. To get a new green card, the filing fee is less than half of what the naturalization filing fee is. So if you're doing that calculus in your head as a permanent resident of the United States, I think for many people, it's going to come down to simply not being able to afford applying for citizenship and instead choosing to simply extend their green cards.
Jacob, meanwhile, believed that immigrants who really want to become citizens will find a way to pay this exorbitant fee hike.
But I think people who want to become citizens, they'll pay. You know, it's kind of like people say, it's so expensive to immigrate and it costs so much money to go through the court. But those people that need it, they'll be able to find the money and do it. It's just the fact that they are doing it in such a drastic way just kind of puts a bitter taste. I mean, people will continue to apply. I think that it's the overall feeling that this country now is not really happy to have immigrants.
Regardless of the upcoming fee increase, documented immigrants will need to be naturalized by October in order to vote in the November elections.
Right, but becoming a naturalized citizen won't protect immigrants from action by the Trump administration. At least, that's what the administration wants them to believe. Every administration has been able to denaturalize citizens they believe have committed some sort of fraud. But the Trump administration has ramped up those efforts, even creating a denaturalization task force in the Department of Justice.
I think it is part of, again, the pattern and practice of trying to delay and disrupt and disturb people's path to legal status in the United States. So yes, I absolutely think that part of the motivation of the denaturalization task force is, or the creation of that task force, that part of the reason it exists is to scare people into not drawing any comfort from the fact that they've now obtained U.S. citizenship and thinking that means that nothing can happen to their immigration status because now they've become a U.S. citizen. I definitely think that sort of fear-mongering is a big theme of the administration generally.
The denaturalization task force has been around for a couple of years, but Jennifer told us that it actually hasn't yielded many cases.
All of this made us wonder if there should be a system for non-citizens to vote, at least at the local or state level. We asked Jacob about this in episode 5, and he told us that he was in favor of allowing immigrants to have a say in their communities.
if people, for example, live in a particular county for 10 years and they've been paying taxes, so we know who they are because they're paying taxes. So why not let them also vote on different things that are happening in their communities?
Unlike Jacob, Jennifer said that immigrants are already pretty vocal about what they want in their communities, despite not being able to vote.
There are ways that non-citizens can make their voices heard in their communities by participating in get out the vote efforts, by writing to the congressmen and U.S. senators who represent their districts, by appealing to U.S. citizen family members and friends to influence their vote in the election. I think that the undocumented population and those who are here legally but not yet U.S. citizens are extremely vocal during this election season.
We definitely saw this when we spoke to Reyna Montoya, the DACA recipient in Arizona, for our last episode. Reyna and several other DACA activists use every tool available to encourage others to register to vote, inform them about what's at stake, and urge others to use their voices at the ballot box in November.
As we mentioned in episode 5, American voters hold all the power in the upcoming elections. Immigrants of all legal statuses, myself included, need to rely on American voters to make the right decisions at the ballot box.
Absolutely. We asked Jennifer what American voters should keep in mind about immigrants and their role in our country when they head out to vote.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the first thing they should know is that there is a ton of misinformation that's floating out there about immigrants, and that before they make any decisions with regard to immigrants or pass judgments about their contributions to our society, they need to be looking at actual credible sources and facts and not just relying on propaganda and biased opinion pieces. All credible economic studies show that immigrants are a net gain for the economy, not a drain, that they create jobs for U.S. workers rather than taking jobs that Americans want, that they commit crimes at a lower rate than native-born Americans. These are all things that we've heard the opposite about from certain politicians. So you have to remember not to buy into the fear and to recall that immigrants helped build our country and to make it stronger, and that all of us, unless we are descendants entirely of Native Americans, came from somewhere else at some point. And we can all trace our roots back to people who were not originally born here and who came to this country and helped to make it better. And I think if we come into the debate with that perspective and to remember that all of us are human beings, even those without legal papers, it will help to humanize the debate and the discussion and to make us remember the contributions that historically immigrants have always made to our country.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of America the Voiceless. Tune in next week as we delve into the barriers Native Americans face at the ballot box. A special thank you to our podcast producer Willis Polk, audio engineer Phil Williams, and the rest of the North Star staff.
This podcast is brought to you by the North Star, an independent media site fully supported by our members on thenorthstar.com. If you're not already a member, we'd love for you to subscribe so you can support our work. You can catch a fresh episode of America the Voiceless every Thursday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.